Good morning. Good morning and welcome to the Ventura Center for Spiritual Living live stream. It's great to have you here, whether you're at home in your pajamas or whether you're one of the few people sitting in our sanctuary. Thank you so much for joining us this morning. And I'm going to pass it over to our board president, Lonnie Cassidy.
Good morning. So glad you can join us. What a special day. I know so much going on, but I'm so thankful that you're taking your time to be a part of this through Facebook, through in-person, and through YouTube. Just know that we love you and we're supporting you. And we have a special morning. Reverend Carol singing, our beautiful practitioner Deborah Gibson praying, and of course our lovely Bonnie Rose. And I see a prop in the future, so I'm just going to let you wonder what that is. Welcome.
Thank you, Lonnie. Let's have our youth and family person, Bill, Mr. Bill, come forward, and he's going to inspire us with his wisdom.
Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning.
I'm Bill Hadris with Youth and Family, and today I found a quote, and I feel bad. I feel like I should have worn an eye patch, because it's a quote from 1855, a Reverend Henry Melville, an English minister, said, "Ye live not for yourselves. Ye cannot live for yourselves. 1,000 fibers connect you with your fellow men. And along those fibers, as along sympathetic threads, run your actions as causes and return to you as effects." So what does that mean, right? Sounds really cool, but I think what he's saying is we're all connected. We are all connected to those who have come before us and those that are yet to come, and that our family tree, if you really think about it, is a tree of life. It's rooted in the same source that connects us to each other and to all living things. So those things that we know and those things that we can't even imagine yet. So I'd like to think of a definition of a family. One of them is all the people we're connected to. You know, like our spiritual family. So think about your pets, right? Your neighbors, your friends, people in the community. That every family is really unique. And so I'd like you to think, do you feel connected to the people in the world? Think about how we affect people in other countries and how they affect us. So with that, I invite you to close your eyes and repeat after me. Say, "My family is a divine connection of life.
My family is a divine connection of life.
And so it is.
And so it is."
Thank you, Bill. Appreciate that. All right, so now I'd love to call forth our wonderful practitioner, Deborah Gibson.
Hi, everyone. I'd like to have all of the practitioners and ministers that are here, that are at home, that are watching at any time, stand with me. As practitioners and ministers in this church, we have discovered that we really love standing, even virtually. I mean, we stand in real life as we're on this service virtually, and it connects our energy even more. And so I open up to each one of you here to feel the energy, to feel your energy one with all of our energies, to be in this one big energy that is the divine, that is life, that is universal life force, that is called by so many names, but just allowing this divine presence to flow in and through and around you, knowing that life itself is alive as well, knowing that the ocean's waves are still beautiful on the shores, and the stars are still shining brightly in the sky. And we on little planet Earth, part of this vast universe, have our ups and downs. So I take this time to know that I am one with this universal life. And as I know that for myself, I know that for each one of you, that each one of you is a precious joy, is a precious individual for some reason, we are all on this planet at this time, and we each have different roles. So I am knowing that the divine presence within you, the light of you, shines brightly in whatever role you're in. Whether it's our beautiful ministers speaking the truth, whether it's our wonderful musicians singing and playing their instruments, whether it's all the people that created this service, whether you are a caregiver, whether you are in the hospitals, whether you are healthy and well and just enjoying life and taking this time to spend time with your family or your friends and walk outside in a safe way, or whether you are sick or whether your loved ones are sick, that in each role that we each have, I am just knowing that we are this divine light that is one with the entire universe. And so draw on that. We draw on that now. I call on that for each one of you, that that universal energy is in you, living your life with you, for you, through you, as you, and that you are amazing. So I am so grateful for the amazingness that you are. I'm so grateful for this time for us to be together. I'm so grateful for us to spend this time together to create good for all of us in a way that magnifies it magnificently. I am so grateful for the divine presence. And I take my word, I place it into the law of mind, the love of God, the wonder of life itself. I let it go like a drop leaves Niagara Falls and just goes. And I know that the divine presence makes it so. And so it is.
And so it is. Thank you, Deborah. And so let us continue to breathe with eyes closed. Ministers and practitioners can sit down if they like. And we relax and we let go and we let ourselves go deeper, deeper into that space of the I Am presence that we always are, but that we take the time to remember right now. And in this place of open-hearted wonder and awe, in this place of peace, we listen to the words of our sacred reading.
Fully human, fully divine. By Richard Rohr. Many Christians simply believe in a supreme being who made all things, and their supreme being just happens to be Jesus. He was the available God figure in Europe and the Middle East, so we pushed him into that position, while ignoring most of Jesus' concrete message that power and powerlessness can probably and probably must coexist. Jesus is actually a third something, fully human and fully divine. This is hard for the dualistic mind to grasp or even imagine. It seems like a self-canceling system, a contradiction in terms, an irreconcilable paradox. In Byzantine icons and many later paintings, Jesus is shown holding up two fingers, indicating I am fully human and I am also fully divine at the same time. This paradox is just too much for the rational mind to grasp. Maybe only art and prayer can help us understand it. For most Christians today, Jesus is totally divine, but not really human. When we deny what Jesus holds together, we can't hold it together for ourselves. And that's the whole point. You and I are also children of heaven and children of earth, children of God and children of this world. Both are true simultaneously, which defies all logic and reason. We need a model, an exemplar, a promise, and a guarantee to imagine such a far-off impossibility. For some, that living model is Jesus. In scholastic philosophy, we call this an exemplary cause, which is exactly how Jesus causes our salvation. He models it. and it rubs off on us when we gaze long enough. Salvation is not a magical transition accomplished by a moral behavior or joining the right group. The only salvation worthy of the name is a gradual realization of who we are already in this world, and always have been, and will be eternally.
So it is. And so we rest in that knowing that each of us is fully human, fully divine, that no matter what our race or religion, ideology, even if we have no religion, our gender, where we're from, where we've been, what we've done, we are still fully human and divine all of the time. It is our joy, it is our job, it is our sacred duty to realize that for ourselves and become examples of the living Christ, Christ being another word for everything, so that we may shine our radiant light and bless the world in ways that are even too mysterious for us to fathom. And so I rest in this knowledge. I rest in the fullness of humanity and divinity. And I breathe into it and then exhale, gently opening my eyes in love and in service to what is, as it is, and so it is.
Oh,
Thank you, you guys. It's beautiful. Thanks. So, wow. What a world, right? Crazy world. Somebody ought to sell tickets. Oh, goodness. Say what?
They are.
They are. You know, last week I spoke about how this is a time of darkness, and it's a time of darkness, literally, in that the darkest day of the year is quickly approaching, and the ancient people knew that and created rituals to give us hope in the time of darkness. I don't know if anybody watching this is Jewish, but of course there's Hanukkah coming up next week, and we celebrate Hanukkah with our Jewish brothers and sisters. Advent is happening right now, which is the way I think of sifting through the darkness until the birth of the Christ consciousness, which is the birth of light into the world. Solstice coming up on the 21st, 22nd, something like that. And, you know, we're married to this idea that light can appear in the darkness, and we hold open the space of hope for that, even when things seem to perhaps not be going as well as we would like them to. I know that the pandemic has been hard for a lot of us, and I know I say this a lot, but I remember when it first started, and I had this feeling of, well, you know, we have to shut down the church, that's going to be really challenging, but, you know, we'll be back in 6 weeks or so. Not so much. Not so much. It's ongoing, and it keeps, you know, getting better, and then it keeps getting worse, and, you know, we don't really, I think in a lot of ways, we don't really understand it. You know, I've listened to a lot of opinions about what is going on and what we should be doing and what we shouldn't be doing. And I noticed the other day when I was chatting with somebody about it that I hear a lot of opinions. I hear the news. I occasionally read a paper or read an article online. And what seems to be missing for me is a spiritual view of the pandemic and how to be with it. So that's part of the undertow of this talk today. It's a spiritual approach to what is going on, to some of the despair or frustration or loneliness that we may be feeling in this time when things are getting ready to shut down again, and how we can find light in the darkness in this time. Because the light is there. The light is always there. We just have to reveal it. So as I was pondering this topic that I'm speaking out about today, which is fully human, fully divine, which is brought to us by mystical Christianity as well as other teachings, I'll get to that in just a moment, I was thinking about a quote that I love from the Gospel of Thomas. I'm going to read it to you. The Gospel of Thomas is an apocryphal gospel, which means it didn't quite make the cut for the Bible, but anyway, I'm going to read this to you because I love it. When you make the two into one, and when you make the inner as the outer, and the upper as the lower, and when you make male and female into a single one, so that the male shall not be male, and the female shall not be female, then you will enter the kingdom of heaven. And what I think that means is that part of our calling here on earth is to reconcile opposites. It's to understand that we are fully human and fully divine. We understand that there is an unbroken wholeness that surrounds everything. And as we start to look at our lives in terms of the fullness of expression, the fullness of human expression and divine expression meeting together, we embrace both of them, and then we become what I like to call the radiant embrace of the embrace. Human and divine embrace one another. They become one. And we are the radiant embrace of the embrace that allows us to experience the kingdom of heaven here on earth, regardless of circumstances. So that's what we're doing today. I expect everybody to do that by the end of this 20 minutes, completely. But, you know, I shouldn't make a mockery out of that, because lives can be transformed in an instant. And as soon as we know, deeply, in all of our little tiny interactions, that we are fully human and fully divine, everything changes. Everything changes. And myself and others see that as one of our primary purposes here on Earth, to reconcile those two seeming opposite conditions that may seem like they cancel each other out, but really they enhance one another and extend into all kinds of other opposites, such as the one that I'm fond of saying, suffering is the new joy, which I'll explain later if I remember. Because people tell me I shouldn't say that cavalierly, that people get really upset when I say that, which I've witnessed. Anyway, moving on, I want to talk a little bit about some of the other viewpoints in terms of this reconciliation of human and divine. You know, in the reading that Hugh did, Hugh read, of course, from Richard Rohr, who's up there hiding behind Gandhi, and he's a Franciscan. We have a new St. Francis, courtesy of All Blown Up, Brian Eller and All Blown Up. He's, of course, I put him next to my dog, Saraswati. We have a whole beautiful array of saints up there. But, you know, Richard Rohr is a Franciscan, and in the Franciscan tradition, they hold the reconciliation of human and divine as something very sacred. The Franciscan tradition tells, very much like the Science of Mind tradition, that the first incarnation was when the universe was created, that God was the void, and then the universe was created out of God. So that was the incarnation of God into the universe in the Big Bang. And that God is out of time and out of space, but there is this nothingness that became everything. Richard Rohr refers to Christ as another name for everything. So Christ has always been with us. The presence of everything has always been with us. The presence of God in everything has always been with us. The presence of God manifesting as the human and the human manifesting as God has always been with us. And then Richard Rohr would say, Jesus came to earth as a great exemplar, as an example of that. He says he had a face that we could fall in love with. So this is very much mirroring what Ernest Holmes says about Jesus, is that he is not the great exception, but the great example. A spiritual older brother that reminds us of who we are, that feelingly reminds us who we are, so that we too can experience the reconciliation of human and divine, of powerlessness and power, of suffering and joy, all in one. That Jesus is a representation of the one, but Jesus is also a third force. You know, when there's two opposites, there's a third reconciling factor that causes the opposites to become one, right? So that's the mystical translation of the Jesus story, but there are other traditions that say this well as well. One of the quotes that I attempted to do recently is from Nisargadatta, and I'm going to try and do it from memory because I worked on it yesterday. Wisdom tells us we are nothing. Love tells us we are everything. And my life flows between those two. That was closer than last time. Wisdom tells us we are nothing. We could say wisdom tells us we are human. Love tells us we are everything. Love tells us we are divine. And my life flows between the two. And it's not even necessarily between the two. It's a reconciliation of the two, of nothing becoming everything and everything becoming nothing. You know that I love this metaphor so much, but if we add all of the numbers up to infinity, all of the positive numbers up to infinity, past infinity, and there's no past infinity. But anyway, if we add all of the positive numbers and all of the negative numbers, what do we come up with? Zero. So nothing is really everything. And I like that. It kind of baffles and boggles the mind, but when our mind is a bit boggled, it means that we're really onto something. Another way of saying this, I think, is achieved through the marriage of Mother Teresa and Rumi. Granted, they lived in very different centuries, but I still consider it a marriage, because Mother Teresa said that we are just a drop in the ocean, but Rumi said we are an ocean in the drop. We are an ocean, the ocean in a drop. And what if we're both? What if we're just a drop in the ocean, but we're also the ocean in a drop? I would say that we are. We definitely are. And one of my spiritual teachers, Rupert Spira, also says something like this, that we are simultaneously everything and nothing. I brought a prop. Lonnie doesn't know about this prop, but I brought a little prop to show you something that he teaches. And this is a hole in a piece of paper, right? I hope everybody on our virtual land can see it, but, you know, I'm gonna put it up to my eye, and hopefully my false eyelashes won't get stuck to it, and then I'll be in trouble. But anyway, so I look through this hole in the paper, right? And when I look through the hole in the paper, I see that there is indeed a hole in the paper. But Rupert Spira says, not only is there a hole in the paper, there's a paper in the hole. That this space is vastness, it is emptiness. This space may seem like it's contained by the walls of the sanctuary, but it goes on ad infinitum. And so is there a hole in the paper, or is there a paper in the hole? Is there spaciousness in the paper, a space in the paper, or is the paper in spaciousness? The answer is, of course, yes. Thank you. I heard a yes over there. That's a beautiful thing. So all of that stuff conspires to confuse us, perhaps, to boggle our minds, to kind of get us out of our egoic mind. It doesn't boggle the spiritual mind. The spiritual mind completely understands this. The heart completely understands this. But our ego is sometimes confused by this. And that's why in that reading, Richard Rohr says that one of the ways that we transcend the misunderstanding of this is through art and prayer. If anybody has created art, music, visual arts, the art of parenting, you know that there is technique, that you have these human laws or principles that you're working with, but then there's also inspiration, and the two work together. If there are people here that have not done art or music or raised children, I have another example, and that is sports. Sports also works with the human condition of the body, and yet there is inspiration and something that transcends the human condition to create experience and beauty. My sport is, of course, the hula hoop. Here it comes. Okay, thank you, Brother Chris. Yay, Chris. And you know that there are laws of physics. There are physical laws that keep the hula hoop going when you, whoa, stop that. Okay, that keep the, there are laws of alters that interfere with the hula hoop. There are laws of physics that keep the hula hoop going, right? That keep it moving, and it's sort of paradoxical laws. It's not what you think it is. It's a different type of motion than many of us suspect that it is, because the hula hoop is going like that, but you don't go like that. You go back and forth, right? So there are laws of physics that keep the hula hoop in motion. Those are physical laws. Those are human laws, and yet there is a spirit, the spirit that brings us joy when we hula hoop, the spirit that inspired me at the age of 57 to learn how to do it when I didn't think I could. The spirit that provides inspiration and glee and just, well, I think it's beautiful, and and wonder at the just the physical beauty and the gift of the physical and the spiritual merging together to create something wonderful. You're welcome. Thank you. Don't want to interfere with Carol's performance. Thank you, Chris. You may want to hand sanitize after that, okay? So, well, I'm done. I'm worn out. I haven't done that for a while. But, you know, so there's all of this. There's all of this mystery of human and divine circulating through us. And if we don't think it's a mystery, I think we're missing something, because it is a mystery. It's a beautiful thing that, like I said, the ego mind can hardly get around. But when we embody it, everything changes. Everything changes. Our whole life changes. You know, when I was talking about the pandemic before and the quote from the Gospel of Thomas, where the two become one and the male becomes female, I was thinking about the pandemic. What if the pandemic were to become peace? What if the pandemic was to meet perfection? What would that be like if we really, truly, trusted that God is in the universe and the universe is in God, that everything that happens is in God and that God is in everything that happens, that we are a divine being having a human experience, but we are also a human being having a divine experience. I think that that would change everything. That would change, I don't know if it would change outcome. I never know about outcomes anymore. I don't worry about outcomes. All I do and all I encourage people to do is just know that what we really want is God. We really want this full realization of humanity and divinity as one. We really want this realization of humanity and divinity as one. And some may be still puzzled about, you know, why do we do this? Why is this our assignment? Because it is, basically. We do this work because we align with truth, and when we align with truth, we live like the truth is true, and then our whole life changes. I experienced, a very interesting perspective on this the other day when I was up at night researching things. Like I said the other day, where do smells come from? No, where do smells go when they dissipate? Is that one getting old? Seems like it's getting old. Okay. We have a lot of smell. No, he says, we have a lot of smells in our house because we have, 30 animals, so there's that. But anyway, I was researching that, just going through YouTube and watching just a whole bunch of stuff, and I came across this YouTube of Mr. Rogers, Fred Rogers, who's up there sitting next to Joni Mitchell in Nipun Mehta. Mr. Rogers, who, when he had his TV show, a lot of people did not believe in his work. I think I read a commentary on him that said, if you want to create really bad TV, do what Mr. Rogers did. No set, no discernible script, very low tech, very strange script, very sort of ordinary characters, and yet it works for him. It worked for him, I think, because of the goodness of his heart and his kindness. So anyway, I was watching this YouTube about Mr. Rogers, and he was concerned about children who had seen The Wizard of Oz. Now, how many of us have seen The Wizard of Oz? Probably everybody watching, right? And when we were little kids, how many of you were scared by The Wizard of Oz? The witch, the witch is pretty scary. I actually was more scared by the tree throwing the apples. I thought that was really, we had an apple tree in our backyard, and I just, didn't want that to happen. But flying monkeys, yeah, the flying monkeys were scary too. But of course, I like animals, so I thought that was fun. But the scariest part is when Toto gets taken away. Oh my gosh, that was horrible. That was just awful, but then he gets away, so that's a good thing. Spoiler alert. But anyway, so Mr. Rogers was afraid that little children were afraid of the Wicked Witch in the West. So what he did was he invited Margaret Hamilton to come on his show, dressed in her regular clothing, dressed like just a sweet little old lady grandma that just came onto the show and talked about her role on The Wizard of Oz, and put on her costume. Mr. Rogers helped her put on a witch costume. She didn't have the green face, but she had the pointy hat and the black dress. And Mr. Rogers the whole time talked through it about how it was sweet that she was just wearing this costume, and that she wasn't really the witch, but she was wearing this costume of a witch, and that people didn't really need to be quite so afraid of her. It was good to create the drama of the story and the tension of the story, but people didn't need to be terrified of her. And I see that as a metaphor for all of us. What if there are people in your life that have dressed up, that have chosen to dress up in the Wicked Witch of the West costume, in the Wicked Warlock of the West costume? What if there are circumstances in our life that is just in costume, that is just here to inspire us to look at ourselves and go deeper, but it's wearing a costume and it's not as real as we want to make it? I would say that that's true, that the world is a stage and the men and the women upon it are merely players. And we don't have to over-identify ourselves with the character that we seem to be showing up to play, and we don't have to over-identify with the people in our lives that show up playing characters that are less than desirable for us. We can say, oh, she's just wearing the Wicked Witch of the West costume today. right? It's not as serious as we want to make it. And we are fully human and we are fully divine, as is everybody. Christ, another name for everything. Everything is fully human and fully divine. So I invite you, when you're looking at world circumstances, to recognize this. To recognize that there is a divinity in every seeming absence of divinity, that there is a presence in everything that seems too powerful to bear, that there is suffering in, that there is joy in suffering. And what I mean by that is that, I said this last week, but I'll say it again, the minute that we embrace suffering, it is no longer suffering. And by embrace suffering, I don't mean pretending that we like it. I mean the willingness to be with it as it is, to be in love and service with it as it is. Because so many people in this teaching and in probably many spiritual teachings feel that if we are suffering, we are doing something wrong. What if you're not? What if you are here to learn that suffering is really great love in disguise? That's all it is, great love in disguise. If we talk about the suffering of others, that trips people up sometimes too. But if we embrace the suffering of others, we also recognize that suffering also there is love in disguise, and we are empowered to do something about the suffering of others. And really, that's the power of this message. That's the power of the idea of being fully and human and divine, is that it empowers us in a way that is humble. It is the blending of powerlessness and power in a way that opens us up to really be effective, because we're not pushing our agenda, we're not pushing our aggression or our anger on somebody. We are really just opening up to be of service to the divine. For Advent, I know that several of the folks in the congregation, I think we have about 30 or 40 people that are doing this Sikh chant with me. Sikh chant by Sanatam Kaur, who is also up there. Where is she? Oh, there she is. She's sitting behind, she's sitting next to Bill in the bunny outfit. She's a Sikh chanter, Sikh singer, and she has this beautiful chant that I'm listening to every day for Advent. If you want a shorter chant period, Hanukkah is coming up. That's 8 days of chanting. It's a good way to go, too. But some of the lines that really strike me in this chant is that she says that we are to be the alms bowl where soul will pour itself into the alms bowl of ourself. And that at some point, we begin to meditate without meditating. And I love that. Number one, I'm not a very good meditator, so there's that. But number two, there is this idea that if we are reconciling humanity and divinity, if we are reconciling that even in the shrillness of reality, there is divinity there too, then the whole world becomes a meditation for us. And that's an exquisite way to move through life. You know, even the boring things in life, the things that we take for granted. I know that for years I didn't like to go to the grocery store. You know, I just didn't like it. And since the pandemic, I've made an effort, especially since doing this work of reconciling humanity and divinity and looking for opportunities to do that, I go to the grocery store and I see the divinity there. My eyelash coach works there, the woman who taught me how to put on false eyelashes and continues to coach me because I'm still not very good at it. The men in the produce department, they know me well because we have a huge rabbit. And I'm often going over there and asking them for produce. And they, the first time, you know, I wanted to make it more divine. I wanted to open up to more of the divine. So I heard from Spirit, create a relationship with this one guy, Doug, who is always giving you produce. And I said, do you want to see a picture of my rabbit? Do you want to see what we're working with here? Because this is why I'm asking for so much produce. And I showed him the picture, and I thought, he's going to think this is stupid. I showed him the picture, and he goes, Evelyn, get over here and take a look at this rabbit. And now when I go to the grocery store, he wants me to show the picture of the rabbit to the other produce guys. So they all know what we're dealing with here, okay? Godzilla. And her little friend Hoss, who eats like a horse, by the way. He was aptly named. So, you know, even the mundane becomes ordinary. I mean, it becomes spiritual. The ordinary becomes spiritual. And what's even more beautiful is that the spiritual becomes ordinary. meaning that the spiritual becomes commonplace, that the spiritual is everywhere we look. If I really look back on what I experienced, say, yesterday, I haven't had time to do it yet today, and if you do the same, if you look back with this consciousness of everything is spiritual, I'll bet you could count up 100 miracles that happened to you. 100 miracles that happened. Your neighbor bringing you a poinsettia happened to us yesterday. Seeing Hugh's delight in the garden that he creates for us. Playing with the animals. My dog Bartok's birthday party where he got a sausage McMuffin and I posted it on Facebook and everybody was wishing my dog Bartok a happy birthday. So many miracles. That's just the tip of the iceberg. And it's not exclusive to me. It's to all of us. It's to all of us that open up our eyes and our hearts to fully embody the human and the divine in every single moment. Because in every single moment, it is there. It is true. It is right. It is noble. And in that moment, we become the embrace of the embrace, the radiant embrace of the embrace. And it even helps us in times of personal adversity. You know, we've talked about looking at the pandemic as the world putting on its Wicked Witch of the West clothing or any other world situations, and that it's wearing a costume, perhaps to awaken us up to a greater reality. We looked about our personal relationship with ourself in the ordinary. But what about a difficult, say, interpersonal situation? How can reconciling the human and the divine help with that? And what I find in personal situations is that I'm often caught in the idea that there are two sides to every story, when really there's a third side as well. And so recently, you know, I mentioned the idea of suffering as a new joy, and I said that to the wrong people the other day. Said that to the wrong people who did not want to hear it and thought I was making a case for suffering and, you know, beating yourself with a rough stick and whatever other suffering we want to have. And I felt like they were laughing at me and they didn't hear me and I didn't feel I didn't feel like they knew how important I was. Which, as Richard Rohr says, is the first sign that you're in your false self, is that when you were offended by your lack of importance in the world. So I thought, you know, this is all happening on email because we're not connecting. I thought, well, I've got two choices here. I can speak my truth. I can speak my truth and tell them that I felt like I wasn't heard. Or I can just take my toys and go home and sulk. I was getting ready to do the latter while resenting them purely. And then I just sort of held the balance of the two. There are these two choices here. I'm seeing two choices. What if there is a third? And so I just held that space, and then somebody in the group emailed everybody, and they provided an opening for me where I got to respond in a whole different way that would not have occurred to me had I not been holding that third place of humanity and divinity and really embracing my humanity, my pettiness with a divine consciousness. And that was just to say, you know what, I'm really sorry if I came off as sounding flippant or resistant to what was going on in the class. That wasn't my intention at all. And then I explained what I meant by suffering is the new joy. That it's suffering is a beautiful indicator of compassion and love. And as soon as we start moving into that place where we see what it really is, then there is something precious and something powerful in it that we might not have experienced if it were not for the suffering. And it was a beautiful opportunity for me. I got some beautiful responses, but that didn't matter, really, what the response was. What matters is our ability to transcend the two-ness and move into three-ness, which ultimately leads us to four-ness, something brand new being born, and it's all oneness, really. So I really hope that people have understood this mystical, weird talk about humanity and divinity and reconciliation and suffering and joy and pandemic and perfection and all of this. And I really urge you to personalize this message for yourself, no matter what your religion is, even if you have no religion. See if there's a way where you can absolutely hold the truth of your humanity and your divinity without needing to figure it out, without needing to say what it is, but just to be willing to rest in the mystery, to meditate without meditating, and to become the alms bowl where spirit pours into your soul. as it was in the beginning, is now, and ever shall be, world without end. Amen. Amen. Let us pray.